do you enjoy taking personality tests? Maybe you know your four-letter Myers-Briggs result by memory, or maybe, on a less serious note, you get sucked into taking quizzes like, what kind of flower are you, on places like BuzzFeed. They're often marketed to us as ways to improve our lives and our performance. Some employers even require staff to take some of the more serious personality tests and share the results. Some people even take the results and types very seriously, including them on resumes or dating profiles. But what if those results simply aren't accurate? What if they're not all they're cracked up to be? Jennifer Fayard is a personality psychologist and assistant professor of psychology at Ouachita Baptist University in Arkansas. She writes an online column for Psychology Today called People Are Strange. Her piece about personality tests called False Portraits is in the January edition of Psychology Today. Jennifer, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, professors sometimes ask classes to take them. Employers require employees to take things like Myers-Briggs, and then there are the more fun charts. What do we love about taking these tests so much?
Well, there's several things I think that draw us to personality tests in the first place. And I mean, I'll admit it, they're really fun.
Yeah.
Even though I know there's no validity to the what cheese are you test, I still take the what cheese are you test. For the record, I got mozzarella and I was highly offended.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of reasons. You know, one, we're inherently interested in people, including ourselves. And I know a lot of people struggle with fitting in and wondering if there are other people like them, and having a way to sort of categorize yourself can be something that makes you feel a little bit less alone in the world. We like to be able to figure out other people, and if there's a convenient system for understanding other people, that's helpful. But in general, I haven't met a person yet who has not enjoyed taking these tests. It seems to be pretty universal.
Let's look at one of the most well-known ones. A lot of people have taken the Myers-Briggs type indicator on their own, or maybe, as I have, at a workplace. It comes out with this four-letter result like INTP or ISTJ or whatever. Can you talk about what goes into the Myers-Briggs test? What is it claiming, at least, to figure out about us?
So the Myers-Briggs test is a little bit of an offshoot of Carl Jung's theory of personality. It's changed things up just a little bit. It's not exactly what Jung proposed. But basically what they're looking at is cognitive functions. They claim that it's looking at effectively the way you prefer to process the world, that you have four levels of preferences, one that's primary, the rest that sort of follow from there, and whether you are introverted or extroverted basically involves in this system whether you direct your energy toward using these cognitive functions inwardly or outwardly. And so depending on this combination of letters, they would propose that you would interact with the world in sort of characteristic ways.
And people really take this seriously sometimes. I mean, there are whole message boards, I think, devoted to one of those combination of four letters. Employers, as I mentioned, use it. Why did this one in particular, do you think, get so popular?
Honestly, I think it's marketing. They have marketed things very, very well. As you mentioned, a lot of corporations use it. And so, you know, once something becomes popular, sometimes it's popular because it's popular. So I think more than anything, it really has to do with the marketing angle.
Where do you see it falling short? You, and I should say a lot of other psychological researchers,
right,
see a test like Myers-Briggs falling short.
Well, there's a lot of layers to that answer. So for one, the test itself has a lot of issues. A lot of people who have taken the Myers-Briggs have reported that they take it one time. Let's say they get INTJ. They take it another time, a couple years later. They get ENTP, which is a completely different personality type. And so it sort of raises the question, did they actually change that much if these are things that are supposed to be, you know, relatively consistent? Did they actually change that much, or is the system that they use to type, you know, maybe not as effective? There's also some issues with validity or whether it's really measuring what it's supposed to measure well. A lot of studies have looked at different life outcomes. There's been more literature probably than anything on workplace outcomes since it is so frequently used in the workplace, basically to see whether this test, you know, these different types, do actually predict workplace performance, especially with leadership and managerial positions. And the evidence is not great on that front. It doesn't tend to do what it's supposed to do. Some of the issues come from the way the test is constructed, the way it's scored, and we have what's called a forced choice format on the Myers-Briggs. So if you've ever taken a personality inventory that's not the Myers-Briggs, you might have noticed that you answer a single question, usually on a continuum from 1, strongly disagree, to 5, strongly agree, or something similar. What the Myers-Briggs does instead is you have two different, qualitatively different options to choose from. So I tend to, and then you have option A, and then option B, which is a completely different behavior, and you choose one of those things. And I know a lot of people, when faced with that forced choice format, could easily have given either one of those as an answer. You have to pick one, and it ends up with sort of a strange scoring system in a lot of ways that seems to miss a lot of information.
Talking to personality psychologist Jennifer Fayard from Ouachita Baptist University in Arkansas. She wrote a piece in Psychology Today about personality testing and the downside sometimes thereof. Now, you also wrote, Jennifer, about one that I was not familiar with, the Enneagram test. That sounds like a lot of people use this too. What is that?
So the Enneagram is a system that has been around for a little while. I had heard references to it on and off for quite a while. It's recently become more popularized. I forget the author off the top of my head. I apologize. Recently wrote a book called The Road Back to You, which sort of revived this Enneagram system. And it's a setup where you have 1 through 9 numerals that correspond to different types. And the Enneagram claims to look more at motivation than anything, but gives very similar descriptions of the types to what you might see in the Myers-Briggs, where it talks about what you might do across different situations. It's a little bit more complicated than that. There's also what are called wings, and these are numbers that you embody some of those characteristics as well, perhaps in different situations. But this has, again, become popular pretty recently. My students in particular have been very interested in this, and so I get a lot of questions about, have you taken the Enneagram? Have you taken the Enneagram? And I try to hold off at least until I get to know them a little bit better on my personality test rant.
Well, the weird thing is we've got these tests and others that are pretty widely used, at least in popular culture and the business world. But as you write, there is one that psychologists actually use and think holds up pretty well, a lot of research around it, but isn't widely used. Can you tell us what the professionals in the field are actually doing to try to get a handle on the variations of human personality?
Right. We have a trait taxonomy, a personality trait system called the Big Five. And this is 5 families of personality traits that research has shown tend to describe most or a lot of, you know, what people do, how people think, how people feel on a consistent basis. And the Big Five is very, very widely used by personality psychologists. We have not marketed it very well, whereas Myers-Briggs has, you know, cornered the neighborhood on marketing, but then personality psychologists don't use the Myers-Briggs. So there's a little bit of a disconnect between what the researchers do and what's very popular.
Tell us a little bit about the kind of things we might measure in the system that psychologists, personality psychologists actually use.
Yeah, so the Big Five are extroversion, agreeableness, conscientiousness, emotional stability, sometimes also referred to as neuroticism, and openness to experience, sometimes referred to as intellect. And so an acronym that a lot of people use to remember these is OCEAN or CANOE, depending on whether you're an outdoor adventurer. But extroversion has to do with sociability. This is something that we're all pretty familiar with, I think, through pop culture, but also looking at things like your energy level, being dominant and assertive, being enthusiastic, and things like that. Those traits, those qualities tend to kind of cluster together in people. This is why the Big Five are big. It's sort of a collection of related traits. Agreeableness if you boil it down to a single word, would be niceness. People who are agreeable tend to be pretty trusting, tend to be pretty cooperative, sympathetic. Openness to experience is being very open to ideas, enjoying new things, maybe even aesthetic or intellectual pursuits. If you're emotionally stable, you're calm, you're collected, you don't react very, very strongly to potentially stressful stimuli. And then conscientious people tend to be very responsible, self-controlled, organized, things like that. So we've got a range of traits that really cover, again, a lot of our human experience.
We continue our talk with Jennifer Fayard, a personality psychologist and assistant professor of psychology at Ouachita Baptist University in Arkansas. She wrote a piece called False Portraits about personality testing. It's in Psychology Today, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you taken personality tests? What did you learn about yourself, do you think? Do you find the results useful, or do you find this just kind of fun? Have you done this because an employer required it or recommended it? Or as an employer, do you have your employees take personality tests? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Say, you know, when I was in my 20s and the 1980s, I utilized the Myers-Briggs with others. Of course, we were doing clinical work with residents who were developing disabled adults, and the executive director had us take the test. So we were able to identify in each other what our strengths and weaknesses were, mm-hmm. because we worked with different adults differently. And in our different responsibilities, we did take the test more than once. And yes, those results were found on a spectrum. So like you might be an INFP, but you're a P by only 1 or 2 points. And
right.
if you're in a different situation, you might be a T or, you know, a J by 1 point. So you might switch, but it might only be by 1 or 2 points because it's on a spectrum. But in a clinical situation, it was a very helpful test and very effective for our residents. It was a very positive that Myers-Briggs has a very positive use in clinical field.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. And I wonder, Jennifer, even if the scientific rigor isn't there, just the fact of a conversation starter to talk about how our personalities at the workplace are, we might be able to get something good out of it, as Jeff seems to have done.
I agree, and I think that a lot of people have found it useful in that way as well. One of the things that I mentioned in the article is that, you know, even if there are some problems here, this can give people a language and sort of a shorthand for beginning to talk about differences that might be important. And so the Myers-Briggs is not completely without value, right? If we rely on it too much to sort of explain everything that we do, we might have some issues because it's really not capturing things very accurately. But it can, as you said, be a conversation starter and at least help us try to organize our own perceptions of ourselves that maybe we haven't figured out how to communicate to other people or even how to articulate to ourselves.
Jeff, thanks for that call. We'll go to Rachel calling from Racine now. Rachel, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Rachel?
Well, I used to work at GE, and they had all of us take the DISC personality test. And what they had us do is we took the DISC test, and then you had to post what the DISC test tells you is what your personality type is normally and then what your personality type is under stressful situations. And they had us post in our cubicles, you know, what your personality type is and what it is under stress, and it was supposed to help you interact with other people.
Did it help you, Rachel?
Yeah, there was a gal on my team that I didn't really get along with. We just didn't click. And I was an I with a D under stress, and she was a D, so she liked the short, succinct answers to questions that she asked. So when I saw that she was a D, I knew how to approach her, and then we became really great work friends.
Huh. Rachel, thanks. That's what I've never even heard of, Jennifer. I guess there's a lot out there. But, yeah, posting it in the cubicle even.
Yes, definitely. So I have heard of the DISC system. That seems to be becoming a little bit more popular. And it has some things that actually overlap a decent amount with the Big Five, interestingly. I think the under-stress thing is a really interesting thing. And I've not seen that as part of the DISC results before. And one thing that the Enneagram does as well is talk about under-stress. And so, of course, there are individual differences in how people respond under stress. But for the most part, it's all going to be pretty negative. And so we're not going to be our best selves for sure when we're under stress. And so, you know, understanding maybe characteristic things that you do under stress could be really helpful. I have not, however, seen a test that really captures that. So I would be really interested to see sort of what that looks like and how that's assessed.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Jennifer Fayard is with us from Ouachita Baptist University in Arkansas, talking about personality tests, their popularity, and where some of them can fall short. Before I go back to our callers, Jennifer, I wonder if there's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy with personality tests. Like my Myers-Briggs came back that I'm a big introvert, which is mostly true. But some people go with lean into that and say, okay, that means I'm going to give myself space to stay out of things. But some of my best things in life come when I get out of that introvert zone and do extroverty type stuff. So do we risk hemming ourselves in if we believe too strongly in our results?
I think to some extent, yeah. So when we get a result like that, if we really do believe in it, that will be a lens through which we interpret our own behavior and think about our own behavior, possibly even direct our own behavior. And one of the things that we see with things like the Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram is a sense of confirmation bias. So you get a type, you read the description, you suddenly see yourself very clearly in that type, because we may not be paying attention to all of our behaviors equally once we have this kind of guiding framework for looking at ourselves. And so I think it can definitely influence sort of how we do things in the future if we think we really are this type.
Let's go back to our callers. Jeff joins us now in Madison. Jeff, hello.
Yeah.
What'd you want to bring up, Jeff?
Oh, hi. I was going to just I agree with your guess that Myers-Briggs' greatest success may be in marketing the belief that test takers have a set personality type. I used to do it. I've read research that showed that a group of people were given the retested 3 weeks later after their Myers-Briggs test, and 60% of them had a completely different personality type.
Yes, yes.
Thanks, Jeff, for the call. And Jennifer, that's a point you make in your piece on this. Personalities do change, but it tends to be over the course of years, not 3 weeks, as the caller just mentioned.
Right. Typically, change happens pretty slow. There, of course, could be a major life event that could, you know, speed that up a little bit more drastically. We do change over time, but if you take it 3 weeks later, you shouldn't have changed enough to completely change personality types.
Thanks for the call. Time for one more caller, I think. Rick joins us in Madison. Rick, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Rick?
I worked with a coffee shop chain, a small one, and we actually went through a company in Texas and had a personality profile developed for any specific job in the company. In this case, it was for baristas. And so we pre-identified characteristics that we were most looking for, and then a personality test was custom developed for the company. And then it was used. And we just found it amazingly accurate and helpful. It would come up with a description of the individual, you know, after they had responded to maybe, I would say, 100 questions or so. Mm-hmm. It would take them maybe 20 minutes. And but the results were incredibly accurate. And even for the individuals that took it, we always promised that they could see the results and they would come back and simply be kind of amazed at how well it described them.
Rick, thanks for the call. We just have a few moments left. Jennifer, have you heard of the custom personality test for a particular job?
I haven't. I'm sure there are companies that produce those types of things. I'd like to just make a note on the comment that he made about how accurate it felt. And they do often feel very, very accurate. And there's a few reasons for that if we have time to talk about that quick.
Just briefly, yeah.
Sure. I mentioned confirmation bias. When we hear a description, we can suddenly see the characteristics that fit that description pop out a little bit more, and maybe we pay a little bit less attention to aspects of ourselves that don't fit very well. And another phenomenon that we see with personality feedback on these types of tests is often that feedback is almost entirely positive, and that increases our tendency to accept it as opposed to really think about it critically. So I'm not sure what the feedback was on that one personality test. I'd be very interested in that. But that's a reason that sometimes it feels like they've really nailed us when, in fact, there's some things missing and it's maybe pretty general.
Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Jennifer Fayard, personality psychologist and assistant professor of psychology at Ouachita Baptist University in Arkansas. She wrote a piece on personality testing in the January edition of Psychology Today magazine. We've got a link to it up at our website, wpr.org/centraltime. You can still share your thoughts, maybe your experiences in the world of personality testing for good or ill. You can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.